Hello and welcome to In Conversation with Ashwin, and you are listening to your host Ashwin, who will give you a window into stories and insights into the most innovative and interesting people I know. They've written books, created movements, built thriving businesses, and have insanely interesting ideas. For more, check out our past episodes on SoundCloud, iTunes, Stitcher, or any other platform you're listening on. Just search for In Conversation with Ashwin and hit enter and follow. Hello listeners, welcome to episode number 11 of In Conversation with Ashwin. On episode 11, I had an in-person conversation with Swapna Nair, counselor and psychologist, and more importantly, my favorite teacher when I was at school. The theme of our conversation was schooling, parenting, and upbringing. I am forever grateful to her for the influence that she's had in my life at different points, right from when I was a student in class 6. Till date, in fact, I reach out to her and her son, Rohan, who we've had on the podcast in episode 4, if you guys want to check it out, one of my favorite episodes. So yes, I reach out to them for general life advice, and they've influenced my life more than they know it. Ma'am is a national winning second grade teacher of social science and English in various schools in India and abroad with 27 years of experience. She also works closely with school authorities, communicating with parents and providing academic guidance to students. She's a happy grandmom now and loves travel, food, and movies. On the show, we discuss her early childhood, her adventures in Assam. Yes, she was teaching in Assam for a couple of years or more. We discuss how CBSE and Metric are not the only options for Indian children, and also bring up alternate schooling. We chat about parenting and upbringing, why parents need to be more attentive and patient, how and why they should keep their vicarious ambition in check. We also discuss writing, her favorite books, and her mastery of saying no to things and people. We close the episode with a conversation discussing her moment of fame when she was actually chosen as the cover girl for the home improvement magazine called Good Housekeeping. So without further ado, presenting to you my wide-ranging conversation with Swapna Nair. Please enjoy. Welcome to the show. Thank you for taking the time to join us. How are you feeling?
Thank you, Ashwin. I feel really good, happy, and a little nervous too.
Yeah?
It's very strange being interviewed very formally by your students.
I'm looking forward to it. So the first question, diving right in, tell us a little about your early childhood and how that has ended up having an influence on the person that you've become and are becoming.
Well, if I look back, yes, I've had a comfortable childhood, you know, nice family, good education, etc. But maybe if I scratch the surface a bit, which I suppose is there in many families, yeah, there have been situations where I've been victim of, you know, body shaming, of being dark complexioned, abuse, known people, not very unknown, known people. So there have been those dark spots. But yes, each time I went through those downs, somewhere, yes, I wallowed in self-pity for a long time.
Yeah.
And then I would say to myself, no, enough is enough. No more blaming anybody or anything, or no more crying. Time to get up and move. And I would just move on, you know, push the things back.
Yeah.
I didn't know then whether it was good, but yeah, I think that kind of it, bouncing back, is helped me a lot. And when I became a teacher, I didn't realize that all these things would actually help me, because when you've not had a very perfect childhood or perfect life, it's easy to empathize with students. It helped me heal myself by healing them too. You know, I could understand the pain, the sufferings, or the dark spots in children's lives. I've been there, so experience that. So that helped me be more empathetic rather than sympathetic with them. And yeah, so that has really helped me. Helped me per se as an individual, as a teacher, by being with my students, by consciously being there with them, motivating them or encouraging them and going beyond my lesson. And somewhere down the line, after years of teaching,
How did teaching happen though? Did you know that you were always born to be a teacher, or was there a
a sudden watershed moment in your life where you said, yes, this is the profession I have to go after?
No. In fact, teaching was, I think, the last profession I
thought I needed.
Yes. I wanted to become a doctor.
Oh, yeah?
Maybe somewhere healing was part of it. And why? Because that was what I grew up in a society where medicine was the occupation, you know, the profession to look out for. So, and my parents also were motivating me to, you know, encouraging me to study for medicine and become a doctor. That was the society then. Engineering came in much later, which was doctor. Well, I tried my level best. Those days we didn't have coaching classes. We didn't have any tuitions.
Yeah.
And the caste system, all those things played a role. And well, I didn't get a seat. I said, fine, it's all right. Drifted with the times. There weren't too many options. Didn't parents thought more for us. Just went with the flow, got married. And well, and today I may be very aggressive, I may be very outspoken, but in those days when my husband-to-be came and saw me and in-laws, everybody said that I shouldn't work after marriage, I actually agreed.
Yeah.
Today when I look back, I'm shocked. Why did I even agree to that? So I did have an opening in Indian Airlines because my father was working there, but then the opportunity was shut because my in-laws and my husband said no work. But after marriage, when I went to Assam, it just happened that there was a Malayali father, a Christian priest in a small church there. And he said, you're wasting your education. Why don't you just go do something?
Yeah.
So I said, no, I do not know what. There's no opportunity. And there were very few opportunities for women of, you know, good, so-called good families, middle-class families.
Yeah.
Hotel was rolled out. Air hostesses were rolled out. So many, you know, front office, receptionists, these were all not for us. Nursing. So there were very few options. So he said, teaching. So I just laughed. And he brought in the school. There was a school there which was run by nuns. He brought the nuns home. They spoke to me. I was convinced.
Okay.
And I took a decision, yes, I said yes to them, without even asking my husband.
Wow.
Because in those days, it was a big thing.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, and they said, just come in for 3 months, fill up a leave vacancy. And I went and I had actually begged the nuns, I said, they had offered me grade 6 to grade 8, English and social science, because history was my major. So I had actually begged them, don't give me class 8, let me start with class 6. But on that first day, I went to grade 8.
Yeah.
And it was a shock seeing the students, because physically in Chennai, grade 8 students were much smaller made. Here in the Northeast, when I went, and these were all tall children, tall boys towering over me and girls. So I took that first lesson and I knew it was on this wireless inventor called Marconi. I kept repeating the word Marconi and they were giggling. I knew they were giggling, but inside I was actually quite nervous. I thought they were laughing at me.
Yeah.
I didn't know it was a private joke.
Yeah.
So I did throw in a few glares, but I continued with my teaching as if it did not affect me.
And this was day one.
This was day one. So that day went smoothly. And that weekend, the students came home to my place and they apologized for laughing. So I put on a very brave front and I said, well, it's all right.
Yeah.
And they fell in love with me at that moment and I fell in love with them at that moment. They were actually laughing. It was a private joke because Marconi in Assamese is hurl the egg, you know, hit the eggs, throwing the egg. Marconi, Koni is egg.
Okay.
So they were laughing for that and I didn't know. I thought they were laughing at me. So that perspective just changed. And then we bonded so well and I think I fell in love with teaching. And then there was no turning back. I could get along well with the students and I thought, all right, let me do my BEd, my MA. So sitting there in Assam after my son was born, with a lot of help from the schools there, I have completed my education, distance education. Went on to, you know, being a teacher in Assam and in Saudi Arabia for a short stint. And then personal tragedies brought us back home to Chennai, and the journey continued till 2009, from 1990 to 2009, when I had this chance to go to US on a teaching exchange program, and I saw the value of a counselor.
Yeah.
I thought, well, that's great, something which I could do for my students.
So you kind of explored that as well.
Yeah, I explored that and went on to become a counselor and a trainer. So today I just intersperse the skills.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
What is your opinion on schooling? What are the big schools? We don't have to mention names.
Yeah.
What are they doing wrong? Can people look beyond the regular CBSE or matric route today?
Yes, definitely we can look beyond the CBSE or the metric stream. First, coming to big schools, in spite of the government putting a lot of rules and norms that, you know, we should not be publishing results, schools do it subtly, because when you publish results, it's giving a lot of pressure on the society, on parents, and indirectly on the students. Second is the schools, big schools, tying up with IIT and NEET coaching centers. They have now brought the coaching centers into the schoolyard.
Yeah, and then students stay back till 5:30 and just do those classes.
And it's also a way of pressurizing parents. All right, we are now offering this. So, and also telling them that this is all what is life outside. Study for engineering or medicine, whereas the whole world has moved off. We are still stuck in that assembly line of schooling. It's like the Industrial Revolution. They started the schools to churn out workers and technicians to work in the industries, and we are just following that model. But we've moved in the last just 5 years. We have professions which I hadn't even dreamt of.
Yeah.
You know, this app developing, for me it's so fascinating.
Yeah.
You click an app and things just happen. You transfer money, you order food, you get a doctor's opinion, you know your life stats. In fact, I recently read that Google can tell you when you can die. I mean, these are all so fascinating. And we are still stuck with this engineering medicine, and we are bringing that into the schoolyard. So it means, again, we are churning out students only into that line. So what about the others? What about artificial intelligence? What about virtual reality? Are we gearing up students for that? Are we gearing up students even to work with the opposite gender? Schools in our city especially are still very gender specific, boys school, girls school. So how are we training them to work together? How are we training them to be self-employed and entrepreneur, work from home? Today, the work concept has changed.
Absolutely.
Social skills, interview skills. How do you dress for an interview? How would you go to a party? Or how would you go for a formal dinner? How would you dress up to a place of worship? Maybe you may say it's all fluid, yes. But times are just changing.
Yeah.
Like, you know, are we preparing our children for that?
I don't think the schools are keeping up.
Schools are not keeping up. It's the same old syllabus, same old methodology.
Do you think it's convenience? Do you think it's laziness that we don't want to update our systems and get there? Or is it just the management that's extremely traditional in its approach, or both together?
I think the schools, we can't blame the schools entirely, because schools are just churning out what the system demands. Now, the system is
created. Who is the system?
The government. Now, for example, last week, the Tamil Nadu government issued a statement that they will not be changing the usage of BC and AD in history because it would offend the minorities. Now, this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Because world over, all over, we are using CE, Common Era.
Yeah.
So, it could be, you know, before Common Era. BCE is okay and CE. But to, the minute that the government has issued that, so it shows that we are stuck. I think education should become independent of the ministry.
Yeah.
It should be it should be an independent body where it can be governed by, you know, esteemed members from various institutions, educators, those who have passion for change.
Yeah.
Not the ministry. When the government interferes with history, there will be no progress. history has to be taught objectively. History has to be inculcated into the stream. And engineers should also know what is history.
Absolutely.
Unless you do not know your past, you can't understand the present.
Exactly.
So it should be a mix. It should not be just science, and math. Because ultimately, at the end of the day, is a student talking only engineering and medicine and math, physics, chemistry. When we are having a conversation, you need not only the language, but you need to know, and that's history. So, you know, somewhere we are getting stuck. The government has ideas. It says right now, yeah, we need to halve the curriculum because the teachers are pressurized. I do not know halving the curriculum, will it work?
Yeah.
But ultimately, I think we need to look at the system as whole. All right, now the system is there. So now how do we bring out an effect? I think it's in the hands of the teachers. Schools today have become business models. They're hiring teachers, yes. They are looking at very meritorious, very perfect teachers. But I think you hire the person who's had a lot of imperfections.
Yeah, yeah.
They would end up as better teachers.
Yeah, for sure.
Than just those so-called intellectual ones. Because they will never be able to understand the student. You need to
empathize. Get
there and empathize with the student.
Yeah, yeah.
So are you hiring the quality teachers? Are you training the teachers to handle children?
Yeah.
Or is it just the subject? I think that's where we need to look in.
So coming back to question where, okay, so say I have a 4-year-old kid and I'm looking at him joining a school. Should I really look at the conventional big schools, or should I, or do I have a different route today in India?
Yes, we do have
okay. What are the IGC, options,
the international curriculums,
okay.
Like IGCSE and IB schools. I wouldn't say they're too different, but the curriculum offers a very open-minded approach.
Okay.
It makes the child think. I was lucky enough to work in a school in an international curriculum, and I found the curriculum was amazing. The way the lessons have been structured, it is catering to different levels in a classroom.
And so who devises the curriculum in these schools? It's again the within the school, or do they?
This curriculum comes from Cambridge. IGCSE and IB comes from Cambridge.
Okay.
So they've moved far ahead of us. But yeah, again, if it is going to be handled by the so-called teachers who are trained in the conventional method, then... But the schools have a flexibility of hiring teachers who are not BA trained too.
Yeah.
So that leaves the doors open for a passionate individual to come in. So there is, I would say, alternative schooling is coming up a big way in Kerala, Bangalore, Bombay, Delhi. In Chennai, yet to gain ground. Yeah, but there are a few good schools with international curriculum.
Yeah.
And I would definitely suggest that you put your child in there.
Yeah.
Rather than the conventional.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
Because this curriculum encourages them to think. Whereas our curriculum encourages us to do.
To put on your blinkers and
just
stay
do,
in the boundaries.
Do.
Yeah.
And it's frustrating.
I agree. Moving from schooling to upbringing, what are your 2 to 3 tips to parents on upbringing? Specifically, how does a parent help his or her child to succeed without forcing things on him or her? Example, IIT, CA in the Indian scenario. And just generally, right, how does a parent keep vicarious ambition in check? They didn't do things, so I want my children to do these things and, you know, maintain that balance.
Yeah. I think patience is the biggest virtue a parent should cultivate. When you have a child. Now, today I'm able to do a reflect on my journey because I've become a grandmother.
Yeah.
And I was, when I look at my granddaughter, that what should I say, that unchained love that just flows.
Yeah.
And enjoying her every little antique, her little step, every word she utters. See, that is lacking when we are a parent. Obviously, because, you know, the age comes in, the work factor comes in, the time factor comes in. But if we could give that, those moments, you know, those attentive moments, because for children, ultimately, attention is equal to love. And when I say attention, it is a quality attention. It's not multitasking. You can multi-focus maybe. Yes, you can have various things at hand. But when it is your child, you focus on your child. And when you focus on your child, you are observing the child. You're listening to your child. You don't need to talk to your child too much.
Yeah.
That's what I have learned in my journey.
Yeah.
Each child comes with their own script.
Yeah.
See, we don't look at the perfect moment. It's okay if you are imperfect. It's all right. We are all learning. As a parent, you're learning. You may do the best for your child. You may think you're doing the best. But how does a child receive? The child also has his own personality. So if you're conscious of that, if you're able to distinguish that, yes, my child is an individual, not just a part of me, has come through you, yes, not from you.
Yeah.
Which again, I've been inspired by Khalil Gibran.
Oh, yes, the prophet.
Yes, the prophet.
I love his piece on children.
Yes,
So great.
Amazing, so amazing.
Come through you and not from you. He says that exactly,
So if you can... And how do we do that? It's only if we have an, you know, that open-mindedness, that it's all right. My dreams I could not achieve. Yes, I have a different baggage. Let me not impose that baggage on my child. When my son didn't want to continue with the IIT coaching, it had a disastrous effect at home. My parents could not accept it because they could not understand that why he didn't want to do IIT. He was good in his studies. And I said, no, it's okay. He doesn't want to do it. It's just all right.
Yeah.
What are we afraid of? Some failure somewhere. And what is that failure? Oh, you may not be able to own a house. You may not be able to own a car. But every child has got capacity to do something for himself. And that's where I think parents and teachers should understand. Instead of imposing what they think, their desires, all right, and pushing them into the race.
Yeah, I think guidance is one and imposing is another, right? There's a thin line of difference. People overstep it and they're like, oh no, I'm guiding you. But in effect, you're actually
imposing
and really not letting the light shine off their own child and really making them go in a direction that they probably wouldn't have chosen had they had their whole senses up.
Yes, that consciousness, you know, that and that can happen only with reflection.
Yeah.
It is difficult. It is very difficult to achieve that. But if you could understand that ultimately when the child comes to you to talk and you may be busy in the kitchen or you may be busy with your laptop. Today's parents are very busy with their phones. If you could just pause for a minute and just listen, that's enough. And from that listening and paying attention, you will be able to gauge what your child desires, what your child actually wants.
Yeah.
But we don't do that. We might be in the kitchen doing something, cooking. The mother might be cooking and she'll half-heartedly listen. And when that child is not getting that attention, what happens is you're creating the distance in the communication. When the child becomes a teenager, now you are curious. Now you want to know what your child is doing. But by then the child has drifted off.
Yeah.
Why should the child talk to you?
Yeah.
You didn't give that moment.
And sometimes parents feel that the children are too small to know that I am not paying attention.
Yeah.
And they feel like they can get away with it.
Yes.
Because the child is apparently not mature enough to understand. And so later when he's mature enough and he will actually calculate whether I'm listening to him or not, I will be there for him. But they don't realize the crucial period's lost there,
yes,
right?
Yes, it is lost. Because a child is like a sponge absorbing everything. You will think that, okay, it doesn't know. That's one thing I realized in our, especially in our Indian society. We do not consider the child as a separate entity, an individual by himself or herself, an individual who has a mind of his or her own. That is something where even the way we talk, I'm seeing that when I see my grandchild, I'm seeing that when, you know, when you're out of India, especially there, they consider the child as an individual who knows, even
right
if the child is
opinion.
One and a half,
yes,
has a right to his or her opinion.
Yeah. And we will consider it.
We'll consider it. We'll listen to it.
Yeah. Interesting. I know you have a blog called Dream Learns. How often do you write and what do you write about and how did it begin?
How did it begin? I really don't remember how it began, but I just started writing. I used to enjoy writing, especially poems. Especially when I went through these blue days, you know, like depression or sadness. I won't say depression, I would say sadness. I used to write it out, you know, either mostly poems, very few stories. And I love technology.
Yeah.
I'm just fascinated with technology.
Yeah.
So when
it's like a kid in a candy shop.
The whole thing, internet started up and I found that, okay, I could do this. And I enjoyed being with the computer, the laptop. So I started this blog. I was pretty regular, but I'm not a very disciplined person.
Yeah.
Though I'm a teacher and I used to make, I instill discipline in my children.
Yeah.
But yeah, personally, not very disciplined. I thought I would write every day, but no, I think my son is far better than me in that. Yes, very disciplined. For me, it's bursts of spontaneity. And I found that when I've had pain in my life, I wrote more. Maybe I'm not writing much now because there's
not. It's like going to the temple when you have troubles. Not otherwise.
Yeah, sometimes, yeah, pain does bring in poetry and music.
Sure, it does. What do you write about, though?
Firinshi. Very, very much what I go through in life, personally. Sometimes, at one phase, I try to be very preachy. Through my post. But I was not happy. But when I was inspired by my son too in that, where I started writing on what I have been gaining, what I have been learning, what I have been experiencing.
Yeah.
And I find there's a satisfaction in that. It's reaching out. I remember one person at the American consulate, that person said that after reading my blog, he forgave his son and got his son married to the love of his life.
Wow,
I
that
said,
must have been such a great moment for you. Because if something that you write resonates with somebody else, that's enough.
Absolutely. I think letting go is a huge lesson for a parent. I think only if we let go of our children, we will see them blossoming and we can accept them as they are. And well, as parents, if we don't accept, then who else would accept my child? I can't expect the society and community to take care of my child if I don't accept. So something on those lines I had written, and that man forgave and he conducted the wedding.
Yeah, we're definitely going to link that in the show notes so everybody can give it a read. What is the one book that you would gift to another person and why?
I have quite a few books in mind, but I think the uppermost one is Mindset by Carol Dweck.
Oh yeah, it's on my list. Is it good?
Absolutely amazing. I think every parent, every teacher, every individual should read, because we are born, we may say we are open-minded, but are we actually? I think after reading the book, it can give you the answers. Because I myself thought, okay, I was very open-minded, very broad-minded, and so, but I realized, there were certain fixed stereotypes in my mind too. And I'm working on this.
What is another book?
Change Your Questions, Change Your Life.
By?
By Marilee Adams.
Okay.
If when you read Mindset, it will tell you, you need to, it gives distinguishes between fixed mindset and
the
open mindset, right? So how do we achieve that? If you connect that with Marilee Adams' book, you change your questions, it'll change your life. And one more book by Brené Brown. Shame. That's also amazing.
What's that about?
See, as a society, we don't realize that we exert control over another individual by using shame and embarrassment. Anger is the most easily expressed emotion. But one that really terrifies an individual is shame. If you look at honor killing, and so many troubles in the society is because you don't want to be ashamed. You don't want to be embarrassed. And that factor is one which makes one individual have control over the other. And Brené Brown says, don't do that to your child.
At this point, I want to intervene. I've recorded this post the podcast because I realized that the book we were discussing is not Shame. In fact, it's called Daring Greatly by Brené Brown. I mean, she discusses shame on the book. The major theme is shame, but the book is actually called Daring Greatly.
Amazing.
If you could put one thing on a billboard for the world to see, what would it be? Example, Jim Rohn says you're the average of five people you spend the most time with. A famous athlete, I think it's Usain Bolt, he says that the world does not owe you a thing. What would your mantra be for the world to see?
Do or not do, no try. By Master Yoda.
Oh,
Star
yeah?
Wars.
What, sorry, come again on that?
Do or not do.
Yeah.
Don't, no try. There is no try. Either you do or you don't.
Don't do. Don't be in the middle. Try. Yeah.
Especially at this age, I've crossed 50 and I'm finding it's a fantastic age to be.
Yeah, yeah. My mom just turned 52 and she says, this is the beginning of my life. Like, yeah. Mom, I love that spirit.
It's amazing. It's a wonderful stage of life. Why I call it wonderful is because I'm so excited telling no to others.
Yeah.
All these years, there's been a large part of my life where I tried to please others. And I ended up not pleasing myself, and I ended up going into doldrums because of that, trying to please everybody. And I realized, no, that's not my cup of tea. But it took me a lot of reflection and guts to come out and say a no to
a no.
But today, it's so easy telling a no.
Yeah? Ah. How do you do it? I mean, I'm finding it, it's a 2018 resolution for me,
yes.
Say no to more things. It's on my whiteboard, but it's so hard for me to do because I just say yes to so many things and then eventually I realize I'm biting a lot more than I can chew.
Chew, ultimately you're not happy. And secondly, like Master Yoda's, this quote is fantastic. Because the more I read it and the more I realize when you say, when supposing you invite somebody over and
yeah.
that person says, I'll try. It's
yeah.
a definite no.
For sure.
Because already in the back of the mind, he's already framing excuses why he or she shouldn't come
yeah.
come for your party or whatever.
And do you take offense to that when someone
no.
says
no? In fact, I'm appreciating
yeah.
this. I think it was my travel to the West, maybe 18 years ago, to US, to California, when I really understood this power of no. When people there say no, it means a no.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was quite surprised. Somebody offered coffee and I said no, and then they just didn't offer coffee and I said, maybe I should have said yes. I said no out of that Indian sense
yeah,
of
yeah, we say no first,
we
but
say no first.
Second offer will
yes.
come and just like nice.
And the more people say no, the more we serve food on
yeah,
their plate, right?
Yeah.
And
because
they
consider it civil because they're saying no first.
Yeah. So well, then that was liberating. That was really liberating. I know I've earned a lot of flack from family especially, not friends. Friends have been more understanding, but family, yes. Somebody had told me that, yeah, they would like to be picked up at the airport. Initially, I would run.
Yeah.
Now I say, no, you take the cab.
Take the Uber, yeah.
Or take the metro and come. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I will not be able to come and pick you up.
Yeah.
So, or at this time, I'm sorry, I'm not here. At home at this time. And I now, I mean, I think my travels to the West has made me very time conscious and sticking to my word. So I like that. Do or not do, no try.
Yeah.
If I say something, I will mean it and I'll get back to them. I'll say, yes, I will get back. And people are quite taken aback by that. But then, yeah, if I can change somebody with that, great. So I've had a few friends appreciating me for that.
That's awesome.
Yes.
So no, I think it's very...
Somebody
yeah.
has a midweek party and I said, I'm sorry, I'm not coming.
Yeah.
I do not like to party on a weekday. And that person said, you've been so upfront about it, but thanks.
Yeah.
Because...
Also, I think this gives encouragement to other people also to kind of say no more, right?
Yes.
Or to say yes very emphatically. Because when you say yes, you're saying yes so emphatically that you're excited about it. And
yes.
when you're saying no, it's a definite no. In the middle, you're not really making the person understand what your frame of mind is. You're not...
Yeah, and ultimately, like, you don't keep up that promise. You're making the other person unhappy and yourself too.
Yeah. It's just a waste
yeah.
of time.
So I think that helps you to be accountable to yourself, and that's accountability is what we need as a society today.
Yeah. When you first said the quote, I didn't really understand it, but now it makes sense.
Yeah.
Do or
not do.
Not do. No,
no try.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
Yeah.
The more you reflect on it, it's great.
Yeah.
And I think as in society, India, we need this a lot.
For
learning
sure.
to say no. Learning to
and learning to be
accepting
accountable.
Also.
Yeah. No. Someone says no to you, don't take offense. Just say okay.
Yeah.
I respect your opinion.
Exactly.
Versus go home and say, oh, he said no to me, and then wallow in, like, I don't know, self pity or something.
Yeah, this whole thing is enmeshed, you know. It's again, as parents, we do not listen to the child. We don't take a no, you know.
Yeah.
So, from the school also, it's imposed. So, ultimately, as a society, collectively, it's very difficult for us to say a no or accept a no.
accepting also.
And well, that's also the reason why today you see a lot of rapes and molestations happening, because when the girl says no, the boy is not able to accept. He feels that the no is a yes. The movies,
yeah,
everywhere it reflects. So you can't blame the boys too, because that's what they're growing up with.
Back
they,
to
they don't know to accept a no. I think schools should be, you teach history, you teach geography, let it be relative to what's going happening around.
Yeah.
You know, all the subjects, if they could relate to everyday life, if you could teach the subject like that.
Social skills.
Social skills. In fact, schools are scrapping, the CBSE curriculum has a class. I think I must have taken GVC for you.
Yeah,
right?
You have. Yeah.
So I think with me, after I exited the school just stopped. They stripped off that subject, but that was so important.
Yeah.
Everyone is smart. Unfortunately, parents or adults, we think children are not. They don't have a mind of their own. So we have to mold them.
Yeah.
We have to thrust things in.
You just take a high ground and say, I am responsible. And I can mislead them or fool them into thinking something else, but the truth then eventually emerges.
Yeah.
That is so true. Just to end on a lighter note, right? In June 2015, you were the cover girl of the magazine Good Housekeeping. Tell us how that happened and what your experience was like.
Yeah, that was an amazing experience. Actually, it was thanks to my colleague.
You know how I saw that magazine? I went to the club. And I randomly was hanging out at the library, and my mom was at that magazine section, and she said, isn't this your teacher? I'm like, I looked from far and I said, no ma, you're probably mistaking. And then I came closer and I saw it was you. I'm like, what? And then I kind of just saw it on Facebook and was doing the rounds on social media. But yes, tell us how that happened.
Yeah, I think when I look back at life, there have been very fortunate moments.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know whether I really deserved it or not, but a lot of good things have happened. And I'm grateful for that. So there's always a saying in the workplace that you better be nice to colleagues. You never know who's going to be, who's going to open the doors for you.
That's
so, yeah,
true.
I've always been a very friendly person, an amicable person. And I have this colleague who just worked about a couple of years in the school that where you and me were together. And it so happened that she was the one who actually recommended me for this Good Housekeeping. They were looking out for a person.
Yeah.
I think it was to do with Women's Day. So for strong women. And women who've been strong in their personal and professional lives. And she just happened to choose me, and she sent my profile, and I got selected.
Yes.
I was quite surprised.
Yeah.
Well, then they did a cover story on me. They did the interview, and I suppose they felt, I was really worth it.
Yeah.
So it was a fantastic experience. I didn't actually believe. I thought it was spam when I got a mail from them saying that I've been selected, and they would be sending me tickets to Delhi.
Yeah.
Oh, they flew me to Delhi. I stayed in a 5-star hotel, and I was treated like a celebrity.
In what way? Apart from that,
I had a hairdresser, a makeup stylist, a dress stylist, and I lived a day as how a celebrity would.
That is so cool.
It was so cool.
So you had like
so
somebody
cool.
dress you up.
Yeah.
Do like a makeup session.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
They made me model in the dresses, and I learned a lot of safe tips and secrets.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was fantastic. And we had a lot of rounds of interview and stuff. It was good.
Yeah.
Did me good, and I got close to the girl who interviewed me. In fact, later she offered me a job as an online parent therapist.
Yeah.
With an online company.
Yeah.
So somewhere when you meet people, I think we meet people for a reason.
That is true. That is so true. I mean, after 6, 7... No, when was I in school? 9th grade? So that's 3 plus 3 years in college. 6 plus 4 years. 10 years. 10 years later, I'm meeting you. And I would have never imagined sitting in class 9 on raising my hands to answer questions that you throw at the class. Thinking that I'd be asking you questions and talking about life, counseling, therapy. It's I think life comes a full circle, right?
Absolutely. And I see, like earlier, it was always me telling my son, now my son guides me, and now we're here. I used to question you, now you are questioning.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Life is amazing. Sometimes, like, see, when I went for this good housekeeping, I didn't realize, yeah, everybody goes through their downs. And ultimately, I think how we come out of it is what plays an important role. And maybe that's what got me there.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think it's important to have perspective. And with this conversation, my perspective has gone a notch higher. Thank you. Thank you for taking the time to really share your learnings with us. And I hope the listeners will resonate with your journey.
Thank you, Ashwin. And now I also know how nervous a student would get when the teacher questions.
Yeah, I think this was so fine. This conversation was great.
Thank you so much. Thank